Hello and welcome to the True Blue LA podcast post opening day, opening series. We're going to catch up on the first five games of the season, see how the team's going, see what thoughts we have, remark on Coors Field, and kind of go from there to the normal stuff. Got questions, we got a Dodgers rewind. Should I let you talk, Eric?
Coors Cat. We have a Coors Cat. Yeah. My worst nightmare on a baseball field happening. Yeah, it was a weird week. Short week, but yeah. We're a regular season podcast now, so.
That better than a spring training podcast, I think, as much as I enjoy it. So we're going to do all of that after this. I'm glad you looked this up because I was actually curious. It's the first time the Dodgers have ever opened against the Rockies.
Yeah, home or away. I learned that the day before opening day because I didn't bother to look it up before. And I was like, wait, what? So, yeah, this is the 29th year for the Rockies. And first time the Dodgers have played them on the opening day. So in that same period, the previous 28 years, they played the Giants. The Dodgers played the Giants 7 times, the Padres 6 times. Those are the most common. They've also played the D-backs 4 times. So, like, they get around the division a little bit. And the funniest thing, though, was the Marlins, who came in the same year as the Rockies. The Dodgers have played them 3 times on opening day. It was the first 3 years of the Marlins' existence. Very odd scheduling sometimes. I looked up some one-timers that the Dodgers played on opening day in that 28-year period. The Astros, back when they were in the National League, this was 96. They played the Braves in 2006. As Braves were an Eastern team. Over that period, the Braves started in the West when the Rockies first existed. Then they moved to the East. Same with the Astros. They were West. Then they were NL Central. Now they're AL West. Weird team. They're also a team that had 2 trash cans thrown on the field last night in Anaheim. I don't know if you saw that. Yeah, the Expos, the Dodgers played in 2000 on opening day, the Phillies in 97. I believe Curt Schilling absolutely destroyed them in that game. The Pirates in 2010, the infamous Vicente Padilla start that wasn't Clayton Kershaw. And then the Cardinals in 98. So it was a weird thing, the fact that they like hadn't played the Rockies. Were you able to watch like the first few games what was your situation?
Yeah, kind of busy over the weekend, but I did watch most of opening day, which is great, right?
you got the like one stinker out of the way early in the
off and on over a busy weekend, but busy weekend so that my upcoming weekend, the home opener, I should be able to watch most of the games, which I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, that'll be good. And then so we're recording this earlier this week a little bit because our schedule is a little wonky this week. Tomorrow I will be at Dodger Stadium, not because there's a game, but because we're gonna get to see like all the new stuff that was actually new last year, but nobody was there, so it didn't matter. So gonna write something about that, I'm sure, later this week. But yeah, so it should be exciting. I did go to, since our last record, right? Wait, was that right? No, wait. I was at the games before we recorded last week. Okay, this is not old news. This is old news. Okay, never mind. But yeah, so back to the Coors Field stuff. There was like something odd, weird, like just off. Like I think in like at least 3 of the games, if not all 4. The first thing, well, aside from like Clayton Kershaw, who had allowed like 7 earned runs on opening day in 8 starts, he allowed, 7 runs, 6 earned runs, I believe, was the total before Thursday, and then he allowed 6 runs, 5 earned runs on opening day, so it was a very weird game in that respect, but that wasn't the weird part. The weird thing was that the Dodgers' first run of the season was not first runs of the season. Justin Turner was on first base in the 3rd inning. Cody Bellinger hit a ball over the left field fence. Raimel Tapia, former Dodger minor leaguer, looked like he might have caught it. Like, it was a weird angle, but he didn't. And Justin Turner, who thought the ball was caught, immediately started running backwards to get back to first so he didn't get doubled off. And in doing so, passed Cody Bellinger, who was, like, frantically pointing at him. And so that, because they passed each other on the bases, even though, like, the ball was already over the fence, it's a dumb rule. So Bellinger gets a single and he's out. And so, but the run counts. And like, and also this, this provided me the opportunity. I think it was after the game. No, it was the next day where I got to ask my first stupid question of the season over Zoom. I said, was that the first time you, just to Justin Turner, I said, was that the first time you scored a run without touching home plate? Because I, there, in all the confusion, I missed that the umpires actually made Turner round the bases. and I don't know if they showed that on TV or not. I guess the benefit or the peril of me not being there cost me that. But like, I owned it. It was funny. Like, thank God. Like, you know, that's something you get absolutely roasted for. But Justin Turner was, like, a really good sport about it, so it was fun. But, yeah, so it would have been pretty fun if he didn't touch home plate because of the oddity of it. But that's what I was going for. So that was the Dodgers' first win of the season. It's like, okay, how's this season going to go, right? Like, it's going to be a weird one. Then when the Dodgers, they didn't hit a home run until, it's at Coors, right? You'd think, oh, man, home runs are going to fly. They didn't actually hit a home run until Saturday, but it wasn't even, it wasn't over the fence. Well, it sort of was. Like, Zach McKinstry hit a ball that, like, had the distance to go over the fence. Raimel Tapia, again, was there. This time he got a glove on it and, like, sort of highlighted it back into the field. But in doing so, like, he was, like, he, like, ran into the wall. And, like, I believe, I'd never seen this before in a baseball game, but after the game, Bud Black for the Rockies said he had whiplash, which I had never heard of someone getting in a baseball game before, because of, like, the collision with the wall. But anyway, so during the play, like, he sort of knocks the ball back onto the field, knowing he didn't catch it, but thinking it was just over the fence. Tapia was just, well, he was stunned, so he's kind of sitting there on the warning track, and then it's like, oh, crap, the ball's over there. And meanwhile, Zach McKinstry just, like, rounding the bases. Like, one of the easier inside-the-park home runs in terms of, like, there's absolutely no play at the plate. He's standing up, you know, it's like the easiest inside-the-park home run in terms of, you know, no sliding, no anything. But that was, so, Zach McKinstry's first home run in the majors. So the Dodgers at this point have technically one home run as a team. They've also hit one ball over the fence, so they're sort of balanced in that regard. I just want to make sure I don't have this. Okay, yeah. I did not ask this as the trivia, so I will just say it right here. McKinstry was the first Dodger to hit an inside-the-park home run for his first Major League home run since Duke Snider in 1948. So yeah, fun company. Also, the cool part about that, McKinstry, who's, like, I believe 6-for-11 right now, and he has an extra base hit in all four of his games. His parents, who had, you know, weren't able to go to any games last year when he made his major league debut, they arrived in Denver Friday. So they went to the last three games of the series. So they're in person to see his first major league home run Saturday, and then they got to see him start on Sunday, and then he hit another extra base hit. So, like, very eventful weekend for Zach McKinstry. Very cool. The middle game, or not middle game, but the second game in between those two home run games, it was the Coors Cat game. So you had Trevor Bauer debuting, and, like, oh, by the way, he had a no-hitter through six, and he, like, struck out 10. He looked really good. The Dodgers were, like, up 10-0 at some point. I don't remember when the actual Cat came on the field. I think it was later in the game. But, like, that was what I was saying, like, my worst nightmare. Just a Cat, like, coming to destroy me, basically. But just running onto the field. And then you had, like, the security, like, chasing him down. He got, from, so there was something like, I don't remember who was batting, but there was a point where you could see the cat behind home plate, like up on the like wall behind home plate, like just sort of running on the wall, like when someone was batting. And then I think like the next half inning was when the cat was on the field. So it ran from like there all the way to like the left center field warning track. So that was a fun little delay. And then, and then so the Dodgers are up 10-0 in that game. Bauer, he has a no-hitter into the seventh, immediately like gives up a hit in the seventh. So like whatever. After the game, he was like, you know, he basically had like all the stat head, like, no hitters don't really matter. You know, it's all luck and blah, blah, blah. And like, but so he didn't sound concerned at all that he didn't lost no hitter, but it was still like a weird sort of thing. But in that seventh inning, not only did the Rockies get a hit, they hit two run homers off Bauer, but also it didn't really matter because it was already 10-0 at that point. And then, so they finally took him out. They brought in like David Price for his first game since like 2019, his first game as a Dodger. And the first two batters like homer off David Price. You're like, what's going on here? And so that game from 10-0 to 10-6 in like a heartbeat, the Dodgers ended up winning. It wasn't that bad, but like, it was just sort of funny the way it all sort of played out. And then, so you thought like, okay, Bauer taking a no hitter into the seventh, striking out 10. That's probably going to be the best pitching performance of the weekend or like the first week or whatever. And then like the last two were better. Urias was awesome on Sunday. He had never pitched more than 6 1/3 in a game. He got through seven. He actually pitched into the eighth, but gave up a leadoff hit and they took him out. Roberts said after the game, they were going to take Urias out after just one batter. Anyway, the Dodgers were up 4-0, I believe, when they took him out. So it wasn't like a tying run on base or anything type thing. It was just like he'd sort of reached his limit, at least for that game. But he was awesome. His he hadn't really used the changeup that much the last few years. He used to before, I think, his shoulder surgery. But he had 4 strikeouts on the changeup Sunday. He had 6 strikeouts on the changeup all last year. So like that's interesting. And then, like, yesterday, oh, by the way, Dustin May, who won the fifth starter job, was, like, maybe even better. Like, 6 scoreless innings, struck out 8. And it's one of those things, like, I just don't think they wanted to push him. He was only at, like maybe 78 pitches or something low. And, like, he only pitched 6 innings. But, like, so it ends up, like, going through the first time through the rotation, Clayton Kershaw goes 5 2/3 on Thursday, and that was the shortest outing by Dodger starters. So anytime you do that, you're in like good shape, and they're 4-1. The offense, you know, they were at Coors, so that's a big part of it. But like Corey Seager was especially hot. He reached base 4 times in each of his first 3 games, and then last night on Monday he reached base the first 2 times in Oakland, and the Dodgers beat up on the A's so bad that Corey Seager actually got 6 plate appearances in that game, but he made 4 outs in his last 4 plate appearances, and that doubled his out total for the year. So he's 9 for 17, I believe, let me just double check this. His on base percentage is .636 right now. So he's doing pretty good. He doesn't have a home run yet though, so might be time to bench him or something. I don't know. Yeah. Any thoughts on like that sort of
weirdness? Mentioned it on last week's podcast, which was like they're opening at Coors. It's going to get weird. So I'm glad that lived up. Also glad to not be there. Looking forward to the home opener. I realized that, you know, the schedule's made in advance and all that, but it still felt weird to not open at home after you win the World Series. So. I think generally I usually look forward to in just the first game of the year more than the home opener, because who generally cares? But I think this year will be obviously a little different. So looking forward to Friday.
The Dodgers also yesterday, I guess, unveiled for this opening weekend, they're going to wear like, I've seen like probably the last five or six World Series winners have done this, but they're going to have like uniforms with a bunch of gold in them, like gold like trim around the lettering, the numbers, that kind of stuff. For you know, and then they're going to sell those and like you know, partly for the like the team charity, but just in general. So yeah, like I don't know. It's going to be interesting, but like so just getting back to the Trevor Bauer game. Okay, so I have trivia for you. So he was the third Dodgers pitcher or third pitcher to have a no-hitter through six in his Dodgers debut. Not that these Bauer, these pitchers didn't finish a no-hitter, right. But they had a no-hitter through six innings. Can you name the other two?
Probably not, but I'm going to throw out some names after this. Name the other two pitchers who had a no-hitter through six innings in their Dodgers debut. Trevor Bauer did that this past week. Man, I don't know.
Would you like a hint?
Sure. I'll take a hint before I even guess. Oh, no.
These are in the Jacob era, one. And I'm almost certain you've watched at least one of these games.
Yeah, no. I was about to say one thing that's frustrating is like I'm pretty sure I've watched one of these games. That nugget is in my head, and I just can't quite pluck it out.
Both years end in the same number.
Thanks, buddy. So I just have to say names now. Man, I wonder if this is are they both after 2000 or not? That's my last.
Yes. I'll give you one other hint. One of them came up as a Dodger, the other one didn't.
Okay. You know what? For the first time ever, I'm not even going to guess.
Wow.
I think I've guessed every single trivia question, but I would just be stone cold guessing. Not even educated guesses.
So the Dodgers in 2006 traded Cesar Asturias for this pitcher at the trade deadline, and then in his first start in Cincinnati.
Greg Maddux?
Yes. Okay. He pitched six no-hit innings and then was taken out. They were very, watching, just cognizant of his, workload at that time. So he didn't allow a hit, but he only pitched six innings. And then the other one was 10 years later. In his major league debut in San Francisco, one Ross Stripling took a no-hitter into the eighth and then was removed with a no-hitter going after seven and a third. And then I believe that was Chris Hatcher who gave up the hit and the tying run right after. But
these were definitely in the punch bowl of my brain, so to speak. I think it's the when I mentioned there was a game that really came to mind. I think it was the Maddux game. That definitely sounds. I do not remember that Ross Stripling thing. I was probably head in the clouds somewhere else, but
I thought for sure that would be the game you would have watched. I was living in San Diego at the time. I remember my nephew was visiting, and I believe I met him at OG's Pizza, if I want to, not mistaken. So I think I was listening to that game on the radio because I was in the car for a good portion of it and going, oh my God, they're going to have a no hitter. It's Greg Maddux. Oh my God. And then, but it didn't happen, but it was very interesting. The other sort of trivial type thing that I'm not going to ask you about, ESPN Stats and Info shared this, or I guess Elias did. Trevor Bauer tied Bob Turley in 1959 for the longest no-hit bid by a defending Cy Young winner in his first game of the season. So there you go. A very memorable start there for that.
Well, before we move on to the Dodgers Rewind, you asked me, I asked you, you have any sort of scattered thoughts on the week or the week ahead?
Yeah. So the other weird thing about like the week ahead, so like the Dodgers are playing the Nationals. As we're recording this, the Nationals haven't played yet because they had like a COVID outbreak. They're going to play today against the Braves, and they play a doubleheader tomorrow. They're off Thursday, so then the Dodgers play them on Friday. So now I will say this: the Nationals released their quote unquote opening day roster today, and they have I believe reliever Will Harris is on the DL with some sort of injury. I forgot what it was that they named. Then they have a bunch of players on the I said DL, didn't I? Damn it. They have a bunch of players on the injured list with no designation. So read into that what you will. But the players are Alex Avila, catcher; Josh Bell, first baseman; Patrick Corbin and John Lester, pitchers; Yan Gomes, their catcher; Brad Hand, reliever; Josh Harrison, infielder; Jordy Mercer, infielder; and Kyle Schwarber, an outfielder. All those people are on the classified injured list. So now it doesn't mean they're going to miss the Dodger series. It just means that I would say they're doubtful. because you don't have to miss 10 days on that. It's just like you have to clear protocols basically to get back. So it's very possible some of those people could be ready by Friday, but we'll see. Trey Turner, I believe, was not cleared to work out yesterday, but he was on the roster today. So it could change in a heartbeat, but just know the Nationals are going through a lot right now. And so that could be a thing. And I believe Steven Strasburg is pitching tomorrow, so the Dodgers will miss him. I think Scherzer's going today, so they probably get him Sunday. But yeah, so that'll be an interesting series. And I also believe, I just want to double check one thing, because there's another weird quirk about this weekend, and I want to make sure I have it right. So the Nationals today, okay, never mind. The Nationals are actually opening it today at home. I thought for a second there would be a chance that the Dodgers would get their rings for 2020 in front of the Nationals before the Nationals got their rings for 2019, in front of fans at least. but that's not going to happen. So that would have been a weird, very weird quirk. But yeah, so looking forward to that. The Dodgers are also, we talked about this, Thursday's actually the 40th anniversary of Fernando Valenzuela's first start in 1981. They're going to actually commemorate that on Sunday. And then they're having obviously opening day stuff Friday with the ring ceremony. That'll be interesting. It's going to be fun. But yeah, the Coors series, you just sort of endure Coors, right? I was surprised, not surprised, but maybe a little surprised that they basically gave everyone an off day almost in that series. Gavin Lux and Max Muncy both started all four games. Everyone else got at least one day off. And then Lux did not start Monday, and Muncy was the DH. So they're working in days off for everyone to start. But I think it's no one got hurt really. I guess Austin Barnes technically got spiked on the hand one day, but he didn't miss time. That's all you sort of look for. And the pitchers didn't get overly taxed. It seemed like the starters went deep. So they survived a long weekend at Coors. So that's kind of all you can ask for. Now, I will say this, in Oakland, the first night, Chris Taylor got hit by a pitch on an elbow. He had a contusion. They said x-rays were negative. And then Cody Bellinger late in the game got spiked on the back of his ankle, possibly a calf, and he was limping a little bit. Both of those guys are day-to-day, but I think that's the only thing. Oh, and then I guess Tony Gonsolin is dealing with a shoulder thing. They actually put him on the injured list, so that's kind of the only thing they're sort of dealing with right now, but relatively pretty healthy. Oh, the other thing I forgot to mention, I didn't even put it in the notes, is Kenley Jansen looked really good. With the caveat also that it's at Coors, but he had a 5-out save, which he hasn't had in 2 years. Now, in the eighth inning, the first batter he faced, hit a ball off the bat, I thought for sure was a 3-run home run that gave the Rockies the lead. But like the fact that he sort of hit his spot, and CJ Krohn did not get like everything, or he did, you know, everything didn't hit the ball exactly where he wanted to, meant that it died like right before the warning track. So like that was a thing. So yeah, Kenley looked pretty good, like in terms of hitting spots, and that's what he's going to have to do. But that was sort of encouraging. And then Corey Knebel looked really good as well. He saved Sunday's game. So like, you know, like it's like we're talking about, like they have options, they're willing to do whatever. So I think it's going to be interesting to see how that sort of plays out.
All right, Dodgers rewind.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm switching this up a little bit. So I'll just tell you the rewind is Darren Hall.
Okay.
You might ask yourself, who's the trivia? Who's Darren Hall? No. So the reason I bring this up is because I didn't update this, but I will update it live. The Dodgers are now 4-15 in interleague play in Oakland. Dustin May won last night, the starting pitcher. Now they're 2-4 in the World Series in Oakland. Counting all those games together, only four Dodgers pitchers have won. Four Dodgers starting pitchers have won a game in Oakland. One of them is Dustin May.
Oh, you didn't get. Let me get one right.
I will count that as the right answer for you. Yeah. But how many? So how many can you name of the other three?
Oral Hershiser.
That is correct. Game 5 of the 1988 World Series.
I confess, no game 6. I knew that, but wanted to look it up because I didn't want you hitting me with 80s Dodger pain.
Yep.
But
yep.
I did know it.
Yep.
I would 99% knew it. Let's say that much.
Yep.
I don't know. Let's just throw. How about Clayton Kershaw? You ever do it?
No. In fact, his yet. One.
Not yet. When this podcast comes out, he will have.
Yeah, I remember the one start I was there for in Oakland in 2015. I have never seen Clayton I don't know if this is right, but he was as mad as I've ever seen him on a baseball field. There was he was getting squeezed, and then there was a bunt play like up the third baseline that he couldn't field properly, and then he just chucked the ball into the Dodger dugout from third base. The Dodgers, the visiting dugout is first base there. So yeah. Yeah, I don't know. But we'll not Kershaw for sure.
Oh, I don't know. I'll just say one more name. I'm gonna pull a name from a hat. Kenta Maeda.
No.
Okay.
Okay, so
I got half because I
you,
knew
yeah,
Dustin
May. I'm giving you Dustin May. Dustin May, Oral Hershiser. The first one of those was the night before Oral Hershiser. Tim Belcher won game 4.
I knew there was going to be another one. I'm like, wasn't going to guess it. So I was hoping to get the other one.
Before Dustin May last night, the only Dodgers starting pitcher to win a regular season game in Oakland was Rich Hill in 2018.
I probably could have an old team and all that. I probably could have remembered that.
So the reason today is rewind is Darren Hall. Is because there were two relievers who won games in Oakland. One was Alberto Reyes, who I definitely remembered was a Dodger and didn't forget. In 2001, he pitched the last two innings in a 15-inning game, and they won. Darren Hall in 1997, he won a game there. Now, so I want to get into a little bit on Darren Hall. June 13th, 97. That was actually the first, the Dodgers' second regular season game in Oakland. It was their second interleague play game. They used to have the interleague play at different set times where everyone was playing interleague play for a week or a weekend or something back then. So it was only a two game series. They lost the opener. And then this day, they won. So in the game in question, Eric Karras hit a two-run home run in the eighth to tie the game. Darren Hall comes in. He walked Mark McGwire. He struck out Jose Canseco. He got a young hitter named Matt Stairs. Nobody knows what happened to him after that. Got him to line out. And then somebody named George Williams grounded out. So scoreless inning for Darren Hall. The Dodgers scored two in the ninth, and they won 6-4. Todd Wardell saved it. So Darren Hall gets the win. The first Dodgers interleague win goes to Darren Hall. Now, Hall was a 28th round pick of the Blue Jays, but way back in like 1986, he didn't make his major league debut till he was 29 in 94. And then after 2 years with Toronto, he signed as a free agent with the Dodgers. But then he was like sort of marred by injuries. He pitched in 9 games in 96, but he missed like 5 months after a torn muscle in his elbow. He had to have surgery. Now, in 97, the year he got the win in Oakland, he was actually a very good member of that bullpen. The Dodgers missed out on the playoffs that year very closely to the Giants. But Hall was very good. 230 ERA, 169 ERA plus, 63 games. Now, like, it was a different time. Like, not everyone's like striking out crazy numbers. I thought this was interesting. 39 strikeouts, 26 walks in 54 innings, but 7 of the walks were intentional, so it wasn't as bad as it looks. Now, I was looking at this, like, so he's, what, 31, 32-ish? And then in 1998, he was making $650,000 at the time, and I was looking, he was actually the third highest paid player in the bullpen that year. Mark Guthrie was $1.6 million. Scott Rudinsky was $900,000. So, you know, I think he was still going through salary arbitration, so it wasn't like he was a free agent thing. But, like, just the fact that salaries were much different, like, back then. But, so, in 1998, more injuries. He got a torn rotator cuff in April, and he missed, like, half the season. Didn't come back till July, but then he allowed, like, runs in 6 straight games into August. He went on the DL on August 15th with more rotator cuff issues. He actually never pitched again in the majors because the Dodgers traded him to the White Sox next January. I couldn't find an exact reason why he went on the 60-day DL to start that season. I think it was more rotator cuff stuff, but he never pitched in the majors or minors that year or like ever again. So not really sure, but 5 years in the majors, 3 with the Dodgers. 3.93 ERA total, 109 ERA plus, 98 strikeouts in 126 innings. But the first Dodgers pitcher to get a win in interleague play. So, Darren Hall, today's Dodgers rewind.
Thank you. That's good.
Yeah.
You know, I guess that's the end of the episode. We have nothing else to do.
You know what? We did it. We did it. We did a short one this time. Finally. Woo.
Oh, wait. No. We still have...
What?
Questions from Craig. 5 questions from Craig, and as is becoming as tradition as the food question that end the series, we've got a trivia question for you. And I don't think he went easy on you, but we'll see. You've impressed me in the past. 4 Los Angeles Dodger pitchers have recorded 30 or more saves of 2 or more innings. And their time with the Dodgers. Can you name them? And I've got hints aplenty if you need them.
Now, okay. Just trying to think here.
I actually lied. I only have 2 hints, and one's not that helpful. I'm going to give you the not helpful hint, because it only rules 2 players out. Do not say Mike Marshall or Eric Gagne.
All right. I would have guessed Mike Marshall,
yeah.
just because he pitched like a billion.
He had 28 of them.
Yeah. And I assume that was in like a 2-month period. It was like all. No. Okay. So if it's not that, and so I'm sort of assuming for this. So the save was actually not official till 1969, but like Baseball Reference goes back and like retroactively. Add stuff. So I'm assuming that's the case here. So I am going to say for one of the guesses is Ron Peronoski.
Correct. With 44 of them.
Yeah, just because I figured, so he was like their sort of like their go-to guy for like a decade in the 60s. So that's sort of the logic there. Oh boy. Okay. Now I don't remember him getting, well, okay. So I will say, just because I have to get to 4, I'm going to say Jay Howell.
With 30 on the dot.
Yeah, so I know he was only around for like 4, maybe 5 years, but like you know, that was the era. So knowing that, and even though it was probably a shorter time, but he was around for a good chunk of the 80s, I'm going to say Tom Niedenfuhr.
Nope.
Duh!
If okay. you went 4 for 4 after I hyped up the question as a little yeah. harder, I would have been upset.
Okay, now it gets tough because, well, okay. Now, 30, I don't know. Yeah, Kenley can't have 30. Like, even though he has, like, a billion saves, there's no way he has 30 of two innings or more. Okay, so that means I have to figure out... Oh, Steve Howe.
Nope.
Hmm. All right. Charlie Huff?
There you go. With 34. Okay. So you're missing the second place on this list with 43.
Bill Singer.
Nope.
Okay, I don't know the fourth one then.
Jim Brewer.
Oh, I think that's what I meant. Oh, I meant okay. to say Jim Brewer. No, but I mean, I got it wrong. I'm just, yeah. like, my head, I was thinking Jim Brewer when I said Bill Singer.
Oh, no, so. I know that feeling. Yeah. You've definitely done that before yeah. where you'll tell me the right answer. I'm like, I said that.
Yeah. yep, yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Except for in 2016, since Andrew Friedman took over, multiple Dodger pitchers have recorded at least one save in a season. Eric and Jacob, name the number of pitchers that will record at least one save for the 2021 Dodgers. And for the tiebreaker, name the Dodger pitchers with more than five saves this season.
okay. Okay, so one save... I'm just going to talk through it. So I figure Jansen, Knebel, Trinan, Gratterall, and then like other, and then like at least two people getting three innings.
Yep. your thought process is exactly. I'm like, I wrote five down and I'm like, no, there's going to be another sort of et cetera name. And then, oh no, they have eight starters. So there's going to be some weird piggyback situations.
I'm just going to add another wild card one. So I'm just going to say eight. Eight get one save. What about you? Do you have an answer for that?
I was going to say eight, but
I'll switch to seven if you want.
No, I'll go seven. Okay. I'll go seven.
Okay. Yeah.
But I want the notes, because we save these now. I want the notes to note that we both wanted eight. So unless it's seven, and then I knew it the whole time.
But to be fair, my first thought was seven. But so it's weird that you have mine and I have yours. Okay, and then so now the five saves, I think it's only going to be two, Jansen and Knebel.
I don't know if you can see my notes. I literally have six crossed off, and then another seven, Jansen and Knebel, are written down. Yeah, right. No, we're tied on the tiebreaker, but at least we picked a different number, so there we go.
Okay, so I'm going to, just to be different, I'll say three, and then I will say...
Trinan?
Gratterall.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'll just add Gratterall to it. Okay.
Last Sunday night, Angel manager Joe Maddon appeared to leave Shohei Ohtani in the game to qualify for the win. While the Angels did eventually win the game, Ohtani could have been seriously injured on a play at the home plate. Looking back at baseball history, what qualified as a win was somewhat arbitrary and left to the official score in many cases. If we are going to continue using this statistic, should we remove the 5 IP minimum for starting pitchers?
I mean, probably. Like...
real solution is just stop caring about wins, right?
But the thing is, like, I have a hard time letting go in terms of that. Like, you have to, like,
I think it's already kind of happened, you know, and, like, I think saves are diminished in value from a decade ago, and I think so are wins, but I think that trend could continue. I think it'll especially continue if, quality start is a pretty good stat, but I bet there's an even better one to like, if you create a stat that people start caring about more, and something to add for players to value and something for them to kind of be able to base their worth on, things will shift. And then instead you just get wins as a kind of this funny, quirky, archaic measure of its time, but doesn't have to change.
Yeah, I think, like, just from a sheer accounting point, like, I don't want to see them, like, disappear, you know what I mean? Like, but yeah, it's, like, clearly they're not as valuable. But I think just, like, looking at last year, there were some, like, you know, so few pitchers, like, went five or because of, like, the weirdness of the season, that, like, I don't think you necessarily need that minimum. And then there was also, like, the some of the games where, like, if an opener was used and then, like, a pretty clear case for, like, one pitcher should have got the win, like, in relief, and then they didn't. So I think the wins could be relaxed a little bit in that, like, give a little more discretion, maybe, and not be so rigid on some of the things. But so, yeah, I'd be, like, up for, like, changing that a little bit.
Godzilla versus Kong, the Godzilla versus Kong movie is now out, and maybe I'll take a look at it sometime. It won't match the silliness and enjoyment of growing up watching Godzilla movies on TV. Like MC movies often ended up fighting in New York, Godzilla and his cohorts would be in Tokyo. While Jacob did not have to rely on local TV to support his supply of early movie content, was there a genre he could not resist growing up? And for both Eric and Jacob, do you remember the first movie you could not wait to see at a local movie theater? Man, genre-wise, I kind of, like, I guess sci-fi. I get you just generally sort of Star Wars stuff, which is my answer for the other one. It was the Star Wars re-releases. I remember being extremely excited for, because we grew up watching the Star Wars movie, the original trilogy, on Laserdisc growing up. Do you have a Laserdisc player?
I didn't have a Laserdisc player. Missed out. I had
20 minutes aside.
Yeah, I had a couple friends with them, but yeah, not never got that. I did have one middle school friend whose family had a Beta tape player, which was fun. But yeah, like, I just remember that too because he was in, like, some local commercial as a kid, and they only had a copy of it on Beta. So I think that was part of the reason they were keeping that around.
In terms of genre, like, it's not exactly a genre per se, but James Bond movies, actually, now that I think about it, were kind of a mainstay, along with Star Wars, of my childhood.
I don't remember, like, I saw a lot of movies at the theater as a kid. So my mom, her, she was a hairstylist, and her shop was at, like, the Palm Springs Mall. And there was the Camelot movie theaters, like, in the same parking lot. So, like, when I was, you know, pre-high school, there were some days, where on a weekend or something, or in the summer, sometimes I'd go to work with my mom and then just be around, like, the mall all day, you know, or something. And, like, I'd go see a couple movies. And so that was, like, a way to kill time. But then, like, that was, like, a pastime, like, through high school too. Like, we saw a lot of movies. I don't remember, like, being that I hate waiting in lines anyway, like, but, like, I just remember, so the one thing I can remember, like, later on, we did go to, I forgot the exact theater, but I just remember seeing the whatever, I guess this would have been episode one of Star Wars, the one with Jar Jar.
That's the one.
Yeah, I saw that with my cousin and his parents at some theater, and, like, they did it up, like, you know, like, premiere style almost. Oh, yeah. You know, but so that was kind of fun. I just, the thing I remember about that though was they were playing the, like, Muzak in the in the theater beforehand.
Was it a Muzak version of Star Wars themes? That would be great.
No, it was a Muzak version of Careless Whisper that me and my cousin were singing the entire lyrics to. And I just remember one guy turned around and goes, "I will pay you to stop." So, yeah. We did not stop.
Did you get... What? You could have kind of paid.
No, I don't think it was a sincere offer.
I would have stopped and demanded money, please.
Yeah. Exactly. Give him an invoice.
First, happy early birthday to Jacob. Yay!
Yay.
Let's revisit Thursday. Friday.
That's what I meant. Yeah. I meant, I knew it was the day of the home opener. I just messed up the day.
Let's revisit burgers. Amen. I know we have talked about them before, and also Eric has mentioned, I believe, his past experience at In-N-Out on the podcast. So, Eric and Jacob, do you prefer burgers cooked on the flat-top griddle, grilled over propane, or over charcoal? And does doneness really matter when it comes to any fast food burger? I haven't had a burger since the outbreak, just because we don't...
What?
Yeah. Well, I haven't had a fast food burger. Yeah. Because there's not... We don't have In-N-Out here. that would have been a challenge. But, you know, for Burger King, I'm not going to, you know, fight a drive-thru during all of this.
Yeah.
But, boy, I miss In-N-Out sounds great. Doneness does not matter. I mean, it can't be, like, burnt to a crisp, right? It has to have a little bit of juicy, but...
And for the most part, like, I mean, I guess you're... I want to, like, Carl's is probably the worst at that in terms of you're more likely to get a puck like, there. But, like, especially, like, In-N-Out, but it's going to be more well than, like, you would probably make it at a cookout or something. But, like, it's still great. Like,
The patties are so thin, like.
Yeah. I'm trying to think, like, just being an apartment liver, I very rarely have, like, barbecued burgers. It's always on some sort of griddle, like in the kitchen, that if I make it myself, or if it's a fast food, those are mostly all on griddles. Like, I would say some, you know, aren't, but like they mostly are. So like I probably tend toward that. They're also the one thing I can't wait when I finally get to go, like, meet up with my aunt and uncle and some cousins in Mission Viejo. There's a place called TK Burgers down there. We go to for breakfast a lot, but they also have excellent burgers, hence the name. and they're on a griddle, but like those are so good. And I'm thinking about it right now, and I cannot wait to eat a burger from there because it's going to be delicious.
I like them all, and they're all different.
Yeah, exactly.
I think I generally prefer griddle. But that may be less to do with the burger and more to do with that makes it much more likely that I'm going to be grilling onions to go with it. And that's a favorite of mine. So,
yeah. Well, I like to, if I'm making something myself, I would probably go out of my way to, like, also grill, like, mushrooms or like throwing that on there or jalapenos or just something extra that you usually don't get in like a fast food burger. But yeah, just in terms of that, like, you In-N-Out really does sound excellent today. And man, if only one of us lived close to one, they could just go to right after we're done recording this. That would be amazing. I don't know. But yeah. So once again, Craig has made us hungry right as we head into lunch. So thanks for listening, everybody. Maybe we'll have more weirdness to talk about next week. We'll definitely have home opener stuff to talk about, and we'll talk to you then. Thank you.